Hello and welcome to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys love to put our spin on box office results, movie news, our own personal favorites and flair, and of course, the newest release. This week, we will be reviewing The Marvels, the MCU's newest release, directed by Nia DaCosta. Now, sadly, this week, we won't be joined by Benny. However, in our third segment, we will be joined by the Boston badass herself, Paige Fabretti. But it's just going to be the two of us for the first two segments. So, JTE, what's up, dude? How's it going?
We're going pretty good, man. You know, the fall movie season is upon us. It is getting very busy here in LA because we do get everything a little bit before everybody else. So while the movies are, you guys are probably looking forward to coming out the next month, have basically come out here. And this is the time of the year where I'm going to the movies like three times a week just so I could see everything before the year is over. Because when I do my top 10 list of the year, I try to see everything I can before the end of the year. And if I don't keep up, the last week of December is just me watching movies nonstop. So I'm going to try to keep pace with all these new releases.
Nice. Well, we appreciate that because I see what I can, but I don't see everything. So between you, Benny, and I think we will have seen everything this year, hopefully.
I'm looking forward to our top 10 list. That'll definitely be probably the last episode of the year or the first episode of the next year, depending on when we do it. But I just always look forward to that every year. Even if I'm not doing a podcast, I always somehow put out my list. So I'm really looking forward to I like just making the list. I write down every movie that I saw throughout the year, and then I just scratch them off one by one until I'm down to like 20 or 30 that I liked. Then I start eliminating, and I just kind of whittle it down until I got my top 10. But then once you get the top 10, you got to put them in order. I don't know. It's just a film geek thing that I love to do.
Man, I'm going to try that this year. I don't think I've ever done something like that. I just always sit there and like look off into space and be like, oh yeah, I like that one. I'm actually going to try that strategy. Good strategy.
Yeah, that's how I do it every year, man.
Well, speaking of some top lists, let's talk about some box office numbers here. Yeah, a little bit of a rough box office weekend for a tentpole movie like The Marvels coming out. And we are filming this on Sunday, so we don't have all of the numbers, but we do have a pretty good figure that The Marvels is going to debut this weekend at $47 million. Not a terrible opening, but the lowest opening for a Marvel movie. And that's a little shocking considering how much fun this movie is, but we'll talk about that in the third segment. Coming in at number two, Five Nights at Freddy's, $9 million. You got to figure this doesn't have too much longer in theaters. So at least it's pumping out decent numbers for Blumhouse. Number three, the Taylor Swift, the Eras Tours with $5.9 million. Priscilla, $4.7 million. Killers of the Flower Moon, $4.5 million. The Holdovers, $3.2 million. We're going to have JT give us a little non-spoiler review of that. Journey to Bethlehem, $2.4 million. Paw Patrol,
see that one.
Did not see that one either. Paw Patrol, the Mighty Movie at $1.7 million. Radical, $1.7 million. And wrapping out your top 10 is Exorcist Believer, which again, I believe will probably be out of theaters here really quickly. But JT, those are the numbers. What do the numbers tell you, buddy?
I mean, the lowest ever for MCU film, that's bad signs for Marvel. And the LA Times, I think it was LA Times or Variety, had a whole piece about Marvel earlier in the week, which was basically like how everything's in shambles, sky's falling. And even when they had the premiere for the Marvels, they had, you know, Kevin Feige was on red carpet and was asked these questions like, what's going on? Like, what's happening? And he played it like he should, very coy. Kept the focus on the Marvels. He's like, we're here to enjoy the Marvels. But yeah, if you're MCU and you're Kevin Feige, you know, I think you got to take this next year as a halftime. Go inside, drop some new plans, refocus yourself. I do think having all the shows in the MCU kind of hurt them. You know, I've heard some people say that this film is the last film of the Bob. Not Iger, but what was the guy that Iger took over for? is like Bob Ecek or something like that.
Oh, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. This is like the last movie that he was in charge of producing and when he was in charge of Disney. So as of right now, I believe the only film that is coming out next year for Marvel is the Deadpool Wolverine film. Everything else got pushed back. It kind of feels like what happened with Kathleen Kennedy in Star Wars. They just said, we're not going to make Star Wars movies for a while. We're just going to take a breather. And while I don't think the MCU is doing that, obviously, I do think this result, you know, the public votes with their dollar. You know, those movie tickets are votes. And they're telling you right now that they're not fully in love with the brand like they used to be. And I don't think it's just this movie's fault. I think this movie just happens to be at the end of a very long road. And it's suffering because of everything that came before it in the dilution of the product and the quality being up and down. We're going to get into that for our second segment. I'm looking forward to really kind of just talking about phase four and the beginning of phase five. Marvel, this is the Marvels is the third film of phase five. You had Ant-Man, Guardians, the Marvels. Before that was phase four. I think Wakanda Forever was the end of phase four. And I think it's just very interesting. Like, what made Marvel so interesting back in the day was the connective tissue. And I feel like four and five doesn't have that connective tissue like before. Even it was just, you had five stones. Those stones would show up in these movies and it got everybody excited. There's nothing like that in these movies. I guess it's the multiverse. That's what it is. But that's so complicated. It's so much harder for audiences to, it's not an object like the stones were, the Infinity Stones. So I think they really just need to refocus. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, this box office result of the Marvels is a totality of what's going on with MCU, not the movie itself.
I'm going to agree with you. I do think that there is, we've talked about this before, there is superhero fatigue, and this is coming from a superhero fan. I'm tired of, like, I could take a year off of superhero movies. But I also feel like you gave the perfect analogy. Like, Marvel needs to go back into the locker room and draw up some new plays. They need to figure out the direction in which they're going. Now, I'll expand on this a little bit more, but where Marvel made a mistake was post-Endgame. They said, you know what? We're going to put Kevin Feige in charge of everything. He's even in charge right now of the Marvel comics and the way that the Marvel comics are going. Listen, I understand if you have a good bet, you double down. Marvel didn't just double down. They tripled down. And when you have the guy who is steering the ship and he's got three different media platforms to steer. He's got the television series. He's got the physical comic books that are coming out. And he's got the movies. And he has to intertwine and tell the story in every one of these mediums. It's too much. I don't understand. Again, I understand why Marvel did that, because at the end of Endgame, everyone was going, thank God for Kevin Feige. Now everyone is going like, Kevin Feige's lost his touch. He hasn't lost his touch. He doesn't have his finger on the pulse. You can tell he's got too many pulses to feel. And so I do think that makes Marvel a little scattered. I will say, and again, I won't go into too much detail, but the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Marvels are steps in the right direction for Marvel. I think both were really, really good movies. It makes me sad to see the Marvels not doing as well. I hope it has good legs. We're coming up on the Thanksgiving season. Really, I mean, your biggest foe in all of this is probably going to be the new Hunger Games movie. But, I mean, how played out is Hunger Games? At some point, I'm not clamoring for a movie about President Snow. I only know that because I just saw the preview today. I've not seen anything past the first Hunger Games movie because that's really all I cared to watch.
Well, the one thing they have is they haven't been around for a while. And that's one thing you can say about the MCU. The MCU are turning out several shows and several movies a year. So you don't have that, you know, longing. You know, I think people who were Hunger Games fans haven't had a Hunger Games movie in quite a long time. So I think, you know, sometimes absence, you know, the heart grows fonder. So I think Hunger Games is getting really good reviews also. The early word of mouth is very positive. Oh, okay. So I think it's going to do fairly well in the box office. We'll see. You never know these days.
I do have to put together a Hunger Games trivia match. So I just told my wife this earlier, like, I got to watch these movies. So I am going to go probably over the next couple nights, watch and get through the Hunger Games series. But I do hope that the Marvel starts to gain some traction. I do hope it starts making good money. I hope good word of mouth comes forward, because this really is a fun, good movie. And it does make me sad that it's not doing as well as it should. Five Nights at Freddy's, again, like $9 million more. That's $127 million domestic for Five Nights at Freddy on a $20 million budget. That is a home run for Blumhouse right there.
100%.
And like you said, Blumhouse, take all that money and put it into the next Spawn movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, give us a good one. Yeah, Taylor Swift tour, come on. People are still going to go out and see that. Benny's not here to kind of be the voice of, like, obviousness, but like the radical Journey to Bethlehem, like, those are all aimed at a very specific audience. And those movies are on a shoestring budget, and they always do well. And so, once again, movies that we haven't seen and probably won't see that are finding its audience and doing well. So not a ton of surprises on the box office. But our first bit of movie news, I absolutely, of course, had to lead off with this. And that would be the new Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Trailer that we got. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'm gonna kick it off with this
one. Yes, please.
Everybody knows Ghostbusters is my favorite movie. I love the Ghostbusters movies. I will defend the all-female Ghostbusters movie. I love Ghostbusters 1, 2, and 3, which is Afterlife. But I'm very excited about this movie. Not just because it was fun to see the Afterlife crew. They're in New York. They're Ghostbusters now. But also because I feel like this is going to be a new story. It's not going to be retreading Gozer, or it's not going to be retreading, Viggo the Carpathian. Like, this looks like a new ghost, a new threat. It looks like an actual threat. Like, this ice cloud comes through New York and it kills all of these people. And it's like, whoa, like, this is a dangerous threat. Whether the preview, like, amplified, like, the threat value of it, this is a whole new story. And, like, this is something that the Ghostbusters haven't faced before. And that makes me excited. It makes me excited that there's, like, an actual, like, threat to New York, possibly the world. And it's something that the Ghostbusters are going to have to figure out. I loved every minute of it. And then at the end, when you see, like, you see Paul Rudd, you see Carrie Coon, you see Phoebe Waller, like, you see all the kids, like, the whole family is there, and they're all, like, wearing these, like, Ghostbusters trench coats in their arm. And Paul Rudd's like, whoa, when they show the big bad ghost. Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm super excited for it. I'm pumped. I loved everything I saw in that preview.
Yeah, listen, I love the Ghostbusters. I think one of the biggest criticism of Afterlife was the fact that they reused Gozer and they reused some of the plans from the original film. And, you know, so you have these original characters, but you didn't have the most original threat or storyline. And watching this trailer, I love the fact we're back in New York. I love seeing the firehouse. The thing that got me most excited about this was it looks like the original Ghostbusters are actually going to be in the movie. Because I thought the way they were used in the first film was, like, a little lazy. Don't get me wrong. I love that they were there. Yeah. But they just kind of show up out of nowhere. And they're just there. It's like, oh, it's the original Ghostbusters. Great. But I want them to actually be part of the story. I want them to actually be present. So I'm hoping... Just from the trailer, you see Dan Aykroyd talk and explain about who this demon or ghost is. Like, that brought me back to the original movies, where Dan Aykroyd would be like, oh my God, it's so-and-so. Because he was always the one, you know, he knew the history.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see a shot of Ernie Hudson, see a shot of Bill Murray, they're not holding it back like they did in the last film. Like, that, they wouldn't put those guys in the movie because they wanted you to be, you know, kind of be like, oh, are they going to show up? Who's going to show up? Obviously, if you know behind the scenes, you knew they were going to. But I'm just hoping they intertwine them into the actual storyline and that we actually get some character moments with those characters and not just a reunion show at the very end. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see the, you know, the new characters also. But I agree with you. You know, seeing this global event, the movies, the first two movies, you had a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man going through New York. The second movie, the, you know, freaking Statue of Liberty comes alive and goes to New York. they're supposed to be this epic scale at times.
Yep.
And I think with the first film, Afterlife, it made a much smaller scale, small town, and then Gozer was in a cave. I'm glad to see the bigger scale threat being in this trailer. So, yeah, I'm all on board. I hope it delivers.
Now, before we move on to our next segment, I did want to pick your brain a little bit because you saw the holdovers.
Yes.
And so without revealing too much, give us your thoughts on this movie.
Yeah, I loved it. It's definitely one of my favorite films of the year. If not my favorite film of the year, I'm still going to have to go around and look at some of our films I saw. But it's in contention for my favorite film of the year. I think Paul Giamatti can do no wrong in my eyes. I've loved just about every movie he's in. He always gives a great performance, and I think you could pencil him in for best actor right now. I tweeted that right after I saw the movie. Like, just pencil him in. He might win. Like, he might win this thing.
Wow.
And I think Alexander Payne had a flop with Downsizing, which I actually never saw. But I know some people liked it. Before that, he had Nebraska, which was an Oscar contender. You know, I really love Election. I really love The Descendants. I think he does a great job of doing something kind of like Cameron Crowe used to do, where you got a lot of humor, but you had those moments of sincerity and heart and drama. And The Holdovers is just a movie like a warm blanket. You just grab some hot cocoa, put a warm blanket on, go back to 1971 and spend some time at this private school for boys where Paul Giamatti plays a grumpy old teacher. If that sounds like it's up your alley, you're going to love this movie. I think it has a great script, great cast, and some of the most heartfelt moments of any movie I've seen this year. So, yeah, I just absolutely adored it.
I root for Giamatti. I really do. I like Paul Giamatti a lot. I think, for my money, his best role was in Cinderella Man. I believe he was nominated for Best Supporting
I believe so, yeah.
But still, like, he's always a welcomed addition to any movie, and I like that he's getting a movie like this to be able to showcase his talent. So I'm excited to see it, man.
Have you seen Win Win?
No.
All right, this is a movie that I think is deeply underappreciated that he made a few years ago with the director who did Spotlight. I'm forgetting the director's name. So he's an Oscar-winning director, but he did a small character film where he plays a gym teacher who teaches wrestling, but also has, you know, some issues at home with his family. But it is very much a comedic drama. It's a dramedy, and Paul Giamatti is so good in that movie. And I can't remember the director's name. Is it Paul? Tom McCarthy. Yes, Tom McCarthy. It was right before he made it super big and started winning all the Oscars. If you're a fan of Paul Giamatti, highly recommend seeking out Win Win. It's a very great, very good character dramedy that I think, you know, when I was watching The Holdovers, I was reminded of Win Win in some ways.
I'm going to take a look at that. Oh, it's got Pauly in it, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Burt Young? Interesting.
Okay. R.I.P. Paul.
R.I.P. Pauly. Well, folks, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to move on to our next section where JTE and I will be discussing phase 4 and 5 of the MCU. Stay tuned.
With Tiger's new Talkboy tape recorder, now you can be as clever as Kevin.
Stop drooling on me.
Tiger's new Talkboy tape recorder comes with audio cassette. Batteries not included.
The Harvey family planned the perfect vacation. What they got was the unexpected.
Captain Ron.
He's suave.
Are you kidding?
Sophisticated.
You sure you know the way?
Any fool could find it.
Well, let's hope so, huh?
And great with children.
You want a beer, you get your own beer.
He's showing them places they never dreamed of.
We're in Cuba?
Back to the rest!
And adventures they never could have imagined. Kirk Russell.
We are out of fuel!
Martin Short. Captain Ron. Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, September 18th.
Welcome back, folks. And now JTE and I are going to break down Marvel's Phase 4 and Phase 5. Now, if you know me, and you should by this point in our journey, I love Marvel movies. I love the MCU. And so this for me is finally a segment that I can sink my teeth into and break down, because I've seen every one of these movies multiple times in Phase 4 and 5. So I'm excited to talk about this. And what we're going to do is we're just basically going to go movie by movie. We're going to say if we liked it, what we didn't like it, what we thought about it. And then ultimately, we're going to talk about whether we think Marvel's on the right track, where the missteps were, et cetera, et cetera. So Prepare for the roller coaster. Here we go. We're going to kick off, JT. Number one, the first entry in Phase 4, and that was Black Widow.
Which was the COVID movie of the MCU. This was the movie that was released on Disney Plus. It was a big deal. I still was able to go see it in the theater because I had some connections and it was still playing at some places. Yeah, so I think coming off of Endgame, it was kind of weird to go back and see a movie that took place before it. So this is a movie that did, to me, feel like it should have came out before Endgame. It should have came out after Captain America Winter Soldier. So I rewatched it again not too long ago, and I feel like I've been doing that a lot lately with the Phase 4 and Phase 5 movies because they're so recent that I want to go back and give them another chance and just kind of see how I really feel about them. I think this movie is actually really well directed and has some really good action sequences, and I do love the addition of course, Florence Pugh and David Harbour. I think those two are really great additions as characters to MCU. And what part of the fun of MCU is finding these new characters waiting to see them interact with other people. I'll never forget watching Avengers Infinity War and seeing Iron Man interact with Chris Pratt's Star-Lord. It was just awesome. It gave me butterflies in my stomach. Yeah. I love seeing these characters interact. So for me, when Phase 4 started, I was really excited to meet some of these new characters. And while we got Black Widow's story and, you know, we kind of got more of what she was doing while in between the before the Avengers Endgame Infinity War, I do enjoy it. I think the opening montage is really cool. I think the opening with them being spies is really cool. I had like that show the Americans kind of stole a little bit from them.
Yeah.
Overall, I think this is a pretty solid action movie. I think the biggest thing that failed for me in this movie was the villains weren't great, and I thought Taskmaster was underused. I think he's an awesome villain in the comics, and he was kind of shoved to the side a little bit and wasn't as cool as he could have been. He could have been an amazing villain for like the Avengers. And instead he just felt like an afterthought. And I don't care that they changed his, you know, sex from a male to female. I could really care less about that. It's more about what did they do with the character and his skill set. And I felt like it failed me a little bit there. What about you?
So I'll start off by agreeing that Taskmaster is criminally underused in this movie. That is such a cool villain. And it looks so cool. Like the character of Taskmaster looks cool. The whole suit, everything worked except for the fact that they're in there for like 3 minutes. And mind you, when they're in it for 3 minutes, they steal the show and it's awesome. And what they can do, and you, if you like harken back to like the fighting styles that they've set up in the MCU, you see the like Captain America, you see the Black Panther, like you see Bucky Barnes in there. Like there's a move that like is almost completely mimicked from Bucky Barnes. And you learn that like this person can imitate and learn how to fight like anybody. It's awesome, but there's just not enough of her. I'm glad that she's going to be redeemed, that we'll see her again in the Thunderbolts because like you said, that's such a cool character. But it was like a lot of Marvel villains, it was a throwaway. And so I'm curious to see, I like this movie a lot, and I think that this movie has aged well, but I am going to agree with you that the movie feels really misplaced. This should have been like a Phase 3 type movie. This easily could have been a nice little filler, like in between the Infinity Wars and Endgame. And you know, we got Captain Marvel, we got Ant-Man and the Wasp during that. Like this, you could have jammed this in there, and this could have been a nice little palate cleanser, like from the horror that was, you know, Infinity War. But I agree. I think the relationship between Natasha and Yelena is great.
Yeah,
Florence Pugh is outstanding. David Harbour steals the movie as the Red Guardian, which we're also going to get in Thunderbolts. So I'm excited by that too. So there was obviously some standouts. I think Rachel Weisz was good in the movie as kind of the mother figure. You know, really the big kind of disappointment is Dracoff, you know, the main villain, and then Taskmaster just underused, but still a solid outing for Marvel.
Yeah, I think Taskmaster could have been the Winter Soldier of this phase and just wasn't. So, yeah.
Yep. Up next, we have Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Love this movie. I think you and I both love this movie.
Yeah.
This might be my favorite of Phase 4. Maybe not. Actually, something that's coming up pretty soon might be my favorite. But out of all the new characters that were introduced in origin stories, this was, to me, is the best of the Phase 4. I just thought, you know, Simon Yu does a really good job. He's really charming. I'm a huge martial arts fan. I grew up watching a lot of these martial art movies, so I got a lot of these references and just the aesthetic. And I think a lot of people complained about the ending being like this huge CGI fest. Guess what? I go to comic movies for those giant CGI fests.
Right.
I want that grand scale. I want those superpowers being used all over the place. So I had a lot of fun with this movie. I think it's a great throwback to like films. You know, it has Michelle Yeoh. It has Tony Leung, who maybe is the best villain we've had since the end of Avengers Endgame. Like, out of all the villains I've been introduced so far, Tony Leung is by far my favorite. He's a legendary actor. He brings so much to his role, gravitas to this movie. I'm a huge fan of Shang-Chi. It's probably my second favorite of all these films so far.
This is my favorite of the of Phase 4 and Phase 5. And this, like, on a good day, this makes my like top five of all the Marvel movies.
Wow.
I love Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I agree. Simu Liu is super charismatic. His relationship and back and forth with Awkwafina is a ton of fun. The sprinkling of Wong in there. Wong is my favorite character right now in the MCU because he just gets better every time we see him. And the like post-credit scene where they're singing Hotel California, like, oh, it's so freaking good. I agree. I understand people's criticism that, like, oh, it's a kung fu movie, so the fighting should be at a smaller scale. I enjoyed the whole fight with that giant, the Soul Sucker, and the Great Guardian. Like, I thought that was super cool. All Asian cast, Asian director, like, the whole thing was epic. We got Trevor Slattery, like, the worst character in Marvel, like, just despised character, and you bring him back in this movie and he's awesome.
Scene stealing, awesome. He's hysterical.
Hysterical. So yeah, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. So when I saw this, it reminded me of like the good old Marvel days. It felt like a Marvel movie. Like that is the one thing I always say about this movie, is it feels like a Marvel movie, a good origin story for a character. Tragically, this is all we've got of Shang-Chi.
I know.
This is it. That movie did great. Like, box office wise, it did great. Reviews, it did great. Where the hell is Shang-Chi?
Well,
he's nowhere.
I think it says a lot that they tapped this director to take on the new Avengers film.
Yes.
So I think that says a lot in how much confidence they have in him and how much he delivered with this film.
I agree. Next up is The Eternals.
This is where I think a lot of people will say the roller coaster started going down in not a good way. I am actually a defender of this movie. So I'll let you go first and hear why you're not a fan.
Okay. One, why? Why do you need a group of 10 individuals? Like, you don't need another Avengers. You don't need another team of people. You have the Guardians. You still have people left over from Endgame. The inclusion of the Eternals, which is a very, very obscure Marvel property, was not necessary. It was too long. It's hard to introduce the concepts that they tried to introduce. They tried a big swing with this movie, a big swing. This movie was 3 hours long. And they tried to do this whole, there is cosmic entities that exist. It's been hinted at in the Marvels, and you see kind of the references, and you see the Eternals, you know, in like the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, the nowhere where their base of operations is the head of an ancient celestial. But then you just go full bore and it's like, the whole galaxy has been created by these giant robots and there's a giant robot in the Earth. And
they're not robots.
And let's introduce you to this team of robots that was created by robots. And then you give us very interesting characters. And the two most interesting characters are Gilgamesh and Makari. Gilgamesh, played by Don Lee, steals the movie, and then you kill him.
Yeah.
Makari, the first deaf character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Oh, she's in it for 6 minutes. She's fascinating. They're both fascinating. And you kill them. Why? Because Angelina Jolie, the least like entertaining character of that movie, needs more screen time. The movie is boring. It's slow. It starts off, like, it kicks off. The first, like, 10 minutes of Eternals is awesome. when it shows them first fighting the Deviants is great, but then it drags and it drags and it drags. And at the end, it's Eternal fighting Eternal. It's not Eternals fighting Deviants. There's one Deviant, really, who's kind of like powered them up, but they're not even fighting him. They're all fighting, what's that fucker's name? Richard Madden plays him.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
Icarus.
Icarus, yep.
Yeah. So it doesn't work for me. It doesn't feel like a Marvel movie. I've seen Nomadland. It's boring. This movie feels the same way. It just feels unnecessary, and it feels like Marvel was like trying to create the next great team, and they were like, "Well, this Chloe Zhao just won an Oscar. Let's give her this tentpole movie." Big swing and a miss for me.
Yeah, I don't think this is like an amazing Marvel movie, but I also don't think it's as bad as a lot of people say. I think the movie is about big ideas, and maybe they're not all fully fleshed out. But I do like that Chloe kind of makes this very emotional superhero film. I mean, these people are gods in a lot of ways. And I think there's some interesting stuff in there. And I really enjoyed the Richard Madden turn. I didn't see it coming. And he's kind of like evil Superman. This is like the Marvel's evil Superman. And I thought the third act, seeing him fight the Eternals and the Celestials coming. I like the grand scale. I mean, they're really were trying to make a epic in the MCU. And while I don't think they, fully accomplished everything they wanted to, there was enough interesting ideas in there for me to enjoy. And I think the cast overall is really great. I think Angelina Jolie does a really good job. I think Richard Madden's really good. I like seeing Jon Snow in there. Kit Harington, he's just a side character. The movie is not your usual, like you said, it's outside the box of what you would expect the MCU movie to be. But I think I kind of liked that. I liked that it was different and kind of had its own pace and its own style. It feels like it could be completely divorced from the MCU. But to me, I think that's refreshing. I think it's something that when it does start mixing back into the MCU, if they ever decide to have these characters come back, I think it'll bring an interesting perspective. I don't think they do bring the Eternals into the MCU, Avengers film, or whatever they do. It might not be the whole team. It might just be one or two select characters. I don't think they'll bring everybody over. So it worked enough for me, but I understand it's a flawed film, but there's enough interesting ideas in there for me to latch onto and some cool stuff in there for me to watch and enjoy. It is long, but it didn't bother me too much. So we'll disagree on this one.
The only good thing about that movie was the post-credit scene where it teased Blade. That's the only good thing about that movie. I will say, I will agree with you on this. I do think that there is a couple of standouts in that. Gemma Chan's really good in the role. I think we might see her again in the MCU.
Richard Madden?
I think he's done. No. Yeah.
No, but did you like him, though? No, you didn't like him. Okay. Yeah. Kumal was great.
I hope that, because I like the character of the Black Knight, so I hope we get Kit Harington back again. That would be the reference to Cersei, Gemma Chan's character. I do think we'll see Kumail Nanjiani again, because he was also a scene stealer in that movie.
Yeah.
So I think we'll get a couple of Eternals peppered in, but I agree. I don't think we're going to get the whole team. Who gives a crap about Sprite? I think we will disagree on that one.
The last thing I'll say is, like, talking about the movie makes me want to go back and watch it again. So that's... At least it has that for me.
I mean, hey, maybe you can sleep better at night having watched that because it definitely will put me to sleep. Next up, I'm pretty sure we're both going to agree, is a home run. Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, this is the one I was saying earlier. Shang-Chi, I was like, that might be my favorite. That's like, wait a minute. No Way Home's coming up. I think, stone for stone, rock for rock, this is the best film of Phase 4 for me. And that's not just because they bring back Tom McGuire and Andrew Garfield. I remember when I watched this film, I thought about Ghostbusters Afterlife because I was worried that they were just going to be like the way they use Ghostbusters and Afterlife and how they just kind of show up at the end. I was worried that's what they were going to do with Andrew and Toby, but they don't. They actually bring them in and they each get their own moments of character development. When Andrew Garfield gets to save Zendaya, like he didn't get to save Gwen, like, that was like one of the most touching moments in the movie. People were like sobbing or tearing up in my theater, seeing the emotion on his face and the way that they informed Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I just think they pulled off. I don't know how they could have pulled it off any better. And my expectations were high going in. So I think it was an absolute home run. I think it actually pushes the character of Peter Parker in the MCU to something. It showed real character growth. The scene where we got Marissa Tomei dying was a shock. I did not see that coming. And yeah, and seeing all the villains, they even closed out the villains better. Spider-Man 3 Sandman gets a more complete ending in this movie than he did in his own film. Like, it was, and Dafoe back as Green Goblin. I mean, Doc Ock, there's really nothing bad I have to say about this movie. I think it's the best of the MCU Spider-Man films. And I think it's the best of Phase 4. And I think it's up in probably my top five of all the MCU films, to be honest with you.
So I'm going to agree with you on almost everything you've said there. like, I really will. Like, so Phase 4 is supposed to be the introduction to the multiverse. This is the first movie, and this is four movies in now, that the multiverse is actually explored.
Yeah.
So this just, again, this kind of goes along with, I think, the theme that Marvel isn't quite sure what they want to do here. But I absolutely adore this. Yes, this is a love letter to the cinematic Spider-Man journey, bringing all of them together, bringing all of the villains together. And the villains are cooler. Like you said, they get better closure. Their abilities are expanded more. Like, it's great. This is a great movie. And the inclusion of Doctor Strange, he's not in it a ton, but he's in it enough. Like, yeah. Enough that, like, there's still a good back and forth between Cumberbatch and Holland with each other. Like, they still have, like, the chemistry that they had from Infinity War and Endgame. And so, yeah, this movie works on all fronts for me. The only thing, and like, the plot of the movie, like, what causes Peter to, like, do all of this is very dumb. That is my one criticism of the movie. It's like, oh, you didn't get into college. Like, because the world found out who you were. Like, Doctor Strange, yeah, like, even points out the dumb plot when he goes, like, why didn't you pick up the phone and just call them? Like, he's like, you could do that. Like, so the plot that brings, insanely stupid. The lead up to it is awesome. The execution afterwards is awesome. The mirror dimension fight sequence between Doctor Strange and Spider-Man is incredible. It's trippy. So, like, John Watts, the director of, like, the MCU Spider-Man movies, you could tell, like, he was excited by this. Like, he loved this property and he wanted to give it, like, an awesome, like, send-off. And he did. And then how it ends, with everyone, including Doctor Strange, forgetting who Spider-Man is.
Yeah.
There's been criticism of Spider-Man in the MCU that, look, nobody, you know, he's supposed to have a secret identity. People don't know who he is. Like, he doesn't have all this high-tech armor like he does in the MCU. Now we're getting, like, the Spider-Man moving forward is the regular Spider-Man, the Spider-Man that you know from the comics. Nobody knows who he is. He's left to his own devices. He doesn't have Tony Stark's fortunes. He doesn't have Tony Stark's tech. Like, he's on his own. And so I'm super curious to see how Spider-Man continues forward. I loved that Venom was not a big thing in this. I know that it was a big thing for Venom, Let There Be Carnage, to have the post-credit scene that included Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
So lazy.
I loved that all he got in the movie was him getting drunk with Danny Rojas from Ted Lasso.
Yep.
And just like, okay. And then he leads a small little portion of the symbiote. So, okay, now we can see a Venom possibly moving into the MCU based off of that. But it's not Tom Hardy's Venom. I don't know. It worked. I thought the arc with Doc Ock was awesome. He was my favorite villain to, like, from the original Spider-Man movies, but then his arc in this one, like, Doc Ock was never a bad dude. He just was always under the influence. And so you see the, like, person that Doc Ock, like, could have been had he grown older without the influence of the arms. And so, I don't know. It works for me on all fronts too. I agree.
And Dafoe did not miss a step. He comes in and is so scary. There's a scene where Spider-Man is punching him, and he smiles.
Yes.
And it sends, like, shivers down my spine. William Dafoe is just a great actor. You know, Alfred Molina. It's just the movie's home run. And you got a little dash of Matt Murdock as Daredevil.
Yes.
Awesome. Love No Way Home.
I agree 100%. The scene on the rooftop after Aunt May dies and he meets up with Ned and MJ, and then he meets the other Spider-Man. Cried every time I watched that.
Yeah. Great movie.
Up next is Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Another decisive one. I think this was a movie that kind of split audiences. I see a pattern here. There seems to be a hit, then a movie that not everybody loves, then it followed usually up by another hit. So I kind of understand where people are like, it's a little uneven, but I feel like the highs are really high and the lows aren't too low. Cause again, I didn't hate Eternals. I guess Eternals was a really low point for you. I'm a huge Sam Raimi fan, as we were just discussing Spider-Man No Way Home. I love seeing all those Raimi characters come back. I really, really like, almost love Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I think Sam Raimi puts a stamp on the film. I think his humor is there. The grotesque moments are there. There's actual moments of real creativity. The fight where they're using musical notes, I've never seen anything quite like that. Mm. I love the multiverse. I will say this. I was hoping for more multiverseness to the movie. I think a lot of people were going in expecting a more of a multiverse. Really, there's that one time where he goes through like a bunch of different planets within like 60 seconds. And then you're basically just in like two other places for the rest of the movie. And then you're back to, you know, Earth 616, whatever you want to, whatever the regular multiverse verse is. But yeah, I just really enjoyed the film. I love the Sam Raimi touches. The fact that he becomes like an evil dead zombie at the end. I was like loving that also. And I thought seeing Scarlet Witch as a villain was horrifying. And the way she tears apart Mr. Fantastic and, you know, Captain America, Captain Britain, Haley Atwell. I just had a lot of fun with the movie. And I didn't quite understand the negativity towards it. Now, I actually don't know how you feel about this movie, so I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are.
So I'm of two thoughts of this movie. I walked away from this movie from theaters and went, I hated this movie.
Wow.
And I've gone back and I've watched this movie several times. Okay. And I didn't, when I walked into this, I didn't think I was going to be walking into a horror movie. And I think I thought I was walking into a superhero movie. And what this is Marvel's horror movie, directed by one of the horror greats, Sam Raimi. And when I start to look at, like, go back to the movie, I appreciate it more and more and more. I appreciate that, like, because when I first saw it, I was like, you got some of the fan casting that you've always wanted, right? Like John Krasinski is Reed Richards. That was my top pick for Mr. Fantastic, right? Was Krasinski.
Yep.
And then we finally get it. And then, man, he's in it for 3 minutes and he's pulled apart like spaghetti. And same, we get Patrick Stewart in the MCU.
Yes.
Pulled apart like spaghetti. We get Haley Atwell carrying the shield. What happens? She gets chopped in half. Like, but then as I went back on a second viewing and I went in thinking like, okay, view this as like a horror movie. I really started to appreciate more and more. I, like you, also wish that there was more of the actual multiverse. I like the character of America Chavez. I think it took too long for her to like be of any use in the
Young
movie.
Young Avenger, maybe?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And we'll tease that in the next segment. But yeah, she for sure will make the Young Avengers. I love the chemistry between Benedict Wong and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh yeah.
I think that I could sit there and watch 10 hours of the two of them just reading, you know, The Great Gatsby together. Like I dig their relationship a lot. There were some scenes in the movie that just didn't work for me. I like the twist of the Scarlet Witch. If you know the Scarlet Witch from the comic books, she turns on the Avengers. Like she is an extremely like horrifying individual because she can alter reality to her will. So I enjoyed like going back and like now appreciating it. I enjoy it a lot. I do think there are a few segments that are big swings and misses. However, that musical note sequence that you referred to where it's strange versus strange is awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's so unique that they're using the musical notes. And as they throw them, it's different notes that are playing and different musical instruments. Like it's really a creative swing. And then, yeah, I did enjoy Zombie Strange and he's got the ghosts that like are now his cape that helps him fly.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot that like I did not like about this movie, but there's a lot that I did. So this isn't a miss for me. This, I do think that this is a good win. I do think this was a good introduction. Like we had Strange aware of the multiverse in Spider-Man helping to close the multiverse. And now he goes on this multiversal adventure to escape the Scarlet Witch. I think that there was not enough multiverse in the multiversal saga of Marvel, yeah. But I do think that this was still a solid entry. Doctor Strange is a weird character. I mean, the name itself says it, right? Yeah. And in the comics, Doctor Strange travels to a lot of really weird places and deals with demons and, you know, heaven and hell and angels and all kinds of stuff. And so if there's one character that, like, be at the forefront of the multiverse, Doctor Strange would be it. So this movie makes sense to me. Like I said, I had to get past the fact that, like, this is a horror movie. Like, this is Marvel's attempt at horror. And you know what? Honestly, like, good for them. Like, you look at, like, the Winter Soldier was basically like a political thriller.
Yeah.
You know, espionage and spies and stuff. And so why shouldn't Marvel have a horror movie? And this one falls into that category. So not a miss for me.
Yeah, last thing I'll say before we move on is just, I think a lot of times the MCU gets directors who are up and coming or have just come off a successful film. A lot of times, you know, from the indie circuit or a small drama, and they're like, let's throw them into the Marvel machine. I was worried, you know, Sam Raimi would just be a job for hire, but it didn't feel that way to me. I really saw the stamp of Sam Raimi throughout the movie. And as this huge Sam Raimi fan, I had a ball with that. I just loved it.
Up next is Thor: Love and Thunder.
Woo. I don't know. I'm not sure how you feel about this. I'll be short and sweet. I left the theater, and I would say about every 5 minutes after I left the theater, I disliked the movie more and more. The more I thought about it, during the movie, I knew I wasn't enjoying it that much, but it wasn't until after I left the theater that I said to myself, that didn't work. That didn't work. I didn't find that funny. That was underdeveloped. And by the time I got home from the drive from the theater, I was like, that was probably one of the worst MCU movies I've seen. And I always, anytime I feel that way about an MCU film or any movie, really, I always give it another chance because your expectations, they're not always going to be what you expect. So I have given Thor: Love and Thunder a rewatch at home, maybe twice. And I don't like it. I can firmly say I don't like it. It's in my collection because I'm a completist. I have to have all the MCU movies, but it's probably the one I'll revisit the least. And when I do revisit it, it'll be out of morbid curiosity to see if time has helped at all. And to me, this was probably one of the biggest disappointments of the MCU because I love Thor Ragnarok. I think it's one of the best Marvel movies. I thought Taika brought his sense of humor to that film. And it's just a perfect blend of what I want from a Thor film. I don't know what happened with this movie. He had to make this movie. I think when he signed on for Thor Ragnarok, he was signed on for the sequel. And I feel like maybe his heart wasn't into it and that he didn't want to make this second film, but he had to. And it just felt half-assed to me. None of the humor really worked. There's so many problems with the movie that I don't want to get into it because I could spend a whole episode doing it. But it is just a huge miss for me. So I'm curious to hear what you think.
It's definitely not. It's definitely a swing and a miss. Look, Thor Ragnarok is like top three MCU movies.
It's so
and
good.
What Taika Waititi did with Thor was arguably up to this point, Thor was one of the most boring characters. And he reinvented Thor and made him just so much fun. And he continued to have that influence over the character of Thor in Infinity War and then Endgame.
But he was still a badass.
But he was still a badass.
He wasn't in this one.
He is and he isn't. I can defend aspects of this movie. Christian Bale is fairly awesome as Gore or the God Butcher. There's just not enough of him.
He's in a different movie.
And he really should, like, there's going to be more Thor movies. Hemsworth needs the MCU because a lot of Hemsworth's solo outings aren't exactly like blockbuster hits. And he hasn't really put out all that great of movies outside of the MCU. So we're going to see more of Thor. I liked there are heartfelt moments in this movie that work for me. Gore losing his daughter, Thor losing Jane. I liked Natalie Portman as the Mighty Thor, but again, rushed. She's Thor, now she's dead. Like, there are a lot of hits and misses in this. It's overly convoluted. Like, oh, he needs to get to Eternity, but in order to get to Eternity, he needs to go here. And like the omnipotent city thing and my God, who played
Master Zeus?
Achilles? Zeus, yeah, who played Zeus? Yeah, Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe, thank you. Oh my gosh. Russell Crowe. It just didn't work for me. I like Brett Goldstein possibly being Hercules, but again, that didn't work. Like the character of Hercules, and even in the comics, always just felt like a Thor knockoff. So like I didn't feel the need to bring in like the whole Greek gods into it. I thought they could have spent more time developing like the back and forth between Gore and Thor. So there's just a lot of missed opportunities. I remembered reading like Taika like was responding to some of the criticisms, and he was like, we kind of had free reign to do what we wanted, and we got a little out of hand. And a lot of the humor kind of goes that way. And you can tell like so much of this was ad-libbed. So while it has its heartfelt moments, while there are a few scenes that make you chuckle, like at some point, this is where I feel like Kevin Feige is distracted. You know what, Taika? You had Thor Ragnarok? Free reign. Feige needs to be back just overseeing the story. And there needs to be aspects of those stories that need to be reined in. There's a good movie somewhere in Thor Love and Thunder, but it wasn't definitely on display.
Yeah, it's you say there are like these heartfelt moments. I felt like any time I felt like that in a movie, it was undercut by a really bad joke, which just like took the dramatic scene by like cut it out by the knees. I felt like the movie was afraid to ever be serious for more than 30 seconds. And it's like, oh, got too sad or serious. Let's throw in a ridiculous joke or gag. And it just kind of ruined the whole tone of the movie for me. The tone is just all over the place. Like I said, Christian Bale's character is in a totally different movie in my book.
Also, if you're going to have the Guardians of the Galaxy in the movie, have the Guardians of the Galaxy in the movie. Don't have them in there for 3 minutes.
The first 5 minutes of the movie is probably the best part of the movie.
Up next is Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, this is a movie. This is the only film I haven't had a chance to go back and revisit, and I've been meaning to, because I will say I was pretty underwhelmed when I saw it the first time. I didn't really seem to, I felt like there were times in the movie where I was like, I walked into the theater ready to have some like emotional man tears. And I was like ready to like really kind of, you know, have this cathartic goodbye to Chadwick Boseman. And for some reason, I never was able to get there. And the movie, I think by losing its star, they had to basically put this movie together after he passed away. And they had to make this movie somehow. And I think the movie feels like it is kind of all over the place. Like you don't have that lead actor. You don't have that lead character really to kind of attach yourself to and have this journey with. So for me, the movie was kind of a mixed bag. There's some cool visuals. I think the villain was pretty cool at times, but it's a movie that I just left underwhelmed by. And it is a movie I need to revisit again. Now that my expectations, I know a little bit more what they were trying to do, but I also haven't had that drive to go back and revisit it. There's not one sequence in the movie where I'm like, oh, I need to see this movie again because of that sequence. I guess the first time Wakanda gets attacked by a submariner, is that pronounced right?
Submariner.
I think that's probably the breakout scene for me. And the scene on the bridge was okay, but everything else, including the final fight and the Iron Man girl, Ironheart, I thought she shouldn't be in this movie. She should have her own Disney Plus show. And I felt like every time they cut to her story, it just took away from everything else that was happening with our characters. So very underwhelming. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. Just underwhelmed.
So that's how I walked away from the theaters the first time. And I did revisit it. And I revisited it again. And the more I watched this movie, the more I appreciate this movie and will defend it. Like
I'm glad to hear that, because I need to revisit it. And I'm hoping that's how I come away also.
At first, it feels like a lot, because they are putting in a lot into this movie. You know, the world is kind of turning against Wakanda in the absence of T'Challa, right? And they're trying to go after this vibranium. Vibranium is discovered in the ocean, and there's this undersea civilization led by Namor. There's a girl in that goes to Boston College from Chicago who is a genius and has built an Iron Man suit. Oh, Riri developed these Iron Man type suits for her people as well. Like, she's having to deal with the death of her brother. She failed to be able to replicate the heart-shaped Earth. Like, there's so much that goes into this movie that I agree, there was a lot. Riri Williams being introduced in this movie might have been the wrong time. I think her having either A, having her own show, or B, being part of the Armor Wars movie, which she will be part of the Armor Wars movie with Don Cheadle, may have been the right place. But I like harken back, and I started to think about how T'Challa was introduced in the MCU movie. And he was just a side character in Civil War. And ultimately, he went on to be one of the most popular, if not the most popular, Avenger after his own solo movie. So I can appreciate the introduction of Riri Williams. I think the like Wakanda Iron Man suits may have been a little too much. You already kind of had this armored hero, and now you have your own. But every scene that Namor is in, and the Talu Khans, the underwater civilization, is amazing. I think that Coogler had a rough task ahead of him and rewrote a story that is not only just a beautiful send off to T'Challa, but also a very emotional story for Shuri. The death of her mother, Queen Ramunda, in that, at like the first time I watched it, I was like, that's unnecessary. But then again, the whole movie is about Shuri learning to deal with grief and learning to deal with loss.
Anger.
And anger. And what does she do? She creates her own suit, and she goes out with the point of killing all of these Talu Khans and Namor. And then she learns to forgive. I think Namor can be a very big antagonist for the MCU if they do this character right. Now, I've heard some rumblings about the actor who played Namor, Tanakh. I heard that he might not necessarily be a great guy, but the character of Namor, nonetheless, whether played by him or someone else, is an awesome character. I actually am excited to see where Riri Williams where Shuri ends up, because she gave up the throne. I'm wondering, I'm fully anticipating seeing her as an Avenger. I think that she could. So Wakanda Forever, not a miss. I would highly suggest you rewatch it again. I do think it gets better upon a second or third viewing.
Yeah, it's one of those ones I've been meaning to and just haven't got to it, but I also haven't felt the drive to either, which, you know, I just have to put myself and rewatch it. I gave Thorner a chance and it just got worse. So, but I think I agree with you. I think I'll probably enjoy it more if I watch it a second time, and maybe a third time I'll enjoy it even more. We'll see.
Give me all the Winston Duke we can get.
Yes, he's awesome.
Yeah.
So that wraps up phase four. That's how they ended phase four. And we're now into phase three. The Marvels being the third film in phase five. There were three films in the phase five. So I guess we'll just end this by talking about the first two films of phase five. And we'll obviously get to the Marvels in a few minutes here. What were your feelings of Ant-Man? Because I think this is kind of the beginning of the downward slide that a lot of people feel like. It really underperformed. It really got kind of trashed by critics. I really enjoyed the first two Ant-Man movies, so I'm curious, what did you think of Quantumania?
I love Ant-Man, and I like a lot Ant-Man and the Wasp, because he's a small character. He has a small-scale adventure, right? Yeah. There's nothing earth-shattering. There's nothing epic about it. I thought that this was a very interesting move for the character of Ant-Man. He's very well loved. Paul Rudd and the character of Scott Lang is loved by everyone in the MCU.
100%.
So why Marvel varied from the script with Ant-Man and decided to give him this giant epic in the quantum realm is beyond me. I thought when I saw that they were that this was going to be the introduction of Jonathan Majors as well. He was introduced in Loki, but this was going to be him as Kang.
Yes, Kang Dynasty.
And I was like, interesting. Okay. Like when I first read that, I was like, oh, Ant-Man's dead as fuck. Like this is how they're gonna get rid of Paul Rudd in the MCU. Like, this is the how you establish Kang as a viable threat to the Avengers, to the multiverse, to everything, is if he kills one of the most beloved, you know, Marvel superheroes in the MCU. I thought for sure that's how the route that they were going to go. And then we got the shit box that was Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. It's not good. I mean, there is fun to be had. Don't get me wrong. The CGI is atrocious in this movie. And it's on display. And there's too much of it. I mean, basically the movie feels like these guys are in front of a green screen the whole time. And you get that feeling. I liked Jonathan Majors as Kang. I hate what he's done in his personal life. And, I don't know how much more of him we're going to be getting in the MCU.
True.
But
that's an easy fix with the multiverse and everything. It's an easy fix.
Well, and the way that they ended the most recent Loki too is almost like Kang doesn't need to be a factor. Like the time variance authorities, they're now basically looking for Kang. So they're Kang watch guards. So you could even just leave Kang alone. How he entered, though, was epic. How the movie can continue to progress, it just didn't work for me. There were a few scenes that felt a little like Star Wars, like when they went into like the bar and they met up with Bill Murray. Like, again, why did we need to include Bill Murray in this movie? I don't know. The whole thing didn't work. Cassie Lang becoming the large, you know, she's got a suit of her own, felt rushed. The suits, like, all of a sudden they've just advanced to this point. Like, every character in the MCU now has advanced to the point where they have mastered, like, not having to put on a suit.
Nanotechnology.
Everybody's got it. It was awesome when Iron Man debuted it. And then it was awesome. And it made sense with Black Panther because they're on the tip of the spear, pun intended, as far as technology goes. Right. So is Tony Stark. But now fucking Ant-Man could just touch his chest and become Ant-Man. And it doesn't work for me. Like the more tactical, like classic suits worked for that character. They've advanced so far, like technology-wise, from where Ant-Man started, it just doesn't make sense for that character. It doesn't. And this, like, big, they have to save, you know, the quantum realm from Kang. Like, the story was larger than the character is. All of these are puns intended for Ant-Man, right? And it just didn't work for me. I love Paul Rudd. Of course, he's a standout in the movie. They finally gave Mike Douglas something to do in this one. So I think that was kind of fun. The biggest miss for Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is you did not have Michael Peña back as Luis.
Yes, I know.
And he was the best part of the first and second Ant-Man movie.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues was taking Ant-Man out of the real world, where his powers are magnified by being, you know, the first film, he's like, Thomas the Train. He's in a suitcase having a fight. The second one, he's in the little tiny car, you know, with Louise. There's ways where, because we live in the real world, we know what's happening when he gets big and small. When he got big in the Quantum Mania, he's just green. It's like he's just in the background of rocks and floating purple things. You lost that Ant-Man, what his power was. You kind of lost what makes him Ant-Man. Like, he's no longer being in this supernatural, crazy sci-fi world made his powers feel less special. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes of the film. I still had a pretty good time with the movie. I think Jonathan Majors does give a good role. Kang is an interesting villain. I like Michelle Pfeiffer having a bigger role in this one. I enjoyed, you know, a lot of people hated that Corey Stoll was back as MODOK. I thought it was pretty funny. One of the funniest lines in the movie, he's like, I'm an Avenger now. And he's like, yep, you're in. That's how it works. Like, there was jokes in there, like when he had the when all the Ant-Man are working together and there's a one Baskin Robbins guy. It's like, why is he there? It's hilarious. I don't know. I still am able to have fun with the movie, even though I see the flaws, and I agree with you. Like, it looks like it's a green screen movie, and I think Ant-Man should be, I think he should stay in the real world because his powers are more meaningful there. That being said, it's not lower tier Marvel for me. It's still mid tier, but maybe towards the bottom of the mid tier. I'm still able to enjoy it, and it's not like 2.5 hours. It's like a 2-hour movie. It's fine. It's fine. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd is too charming to not enjoy for 2 hours.
Yeah. Again, you strayed from the script. Ant-Man belongs in the real world. He needs his team. He needs, you know, he needs T.I. He needs David Dasmalchian. He needs Michael. Like, that works for him. It doesn't work for him, like, to be the size. Like, and all of a sudden he gains, like, these, like, fantastical abilities in the quantum realm. Like, everyone else is getting dissolved if Kang shoots them, but Kang shoots him like 30 times. And it's like, okay, like, good Lord. Like, I understand you have the Ant-Man suit, but like, now all of a sudden you can withstand anything. It doesn't work for me. But what does work for me is our next one, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the very first review we did for our show here, Extra Movie Butter Podcast. But due to scheduling, we had to start the following week. I liked Guardians of the Galaxy 3, but it was not a home run for me. I think it lost some of the fun the first two films had because it does get very serious and dark and depressing at times. And honestly, the biggest mistake for me was this was the last Guardians film. I wanted to see the whole Guardians team working together for an entire film. Now, unfortunately, Rocket is sidelined for about 80 to 90% of this movie. He's literally in a coma. And the only time we really get time with him is when we do flashbacks. Now, yeah, you get him for the last 10 minutes when he rejoins the team. But by taking him out of the movie for the rest of the film and putting him in a coma, I lost that Rocket interplay with the team, which I loved in the previous films. So it felt like I was watching the, you know, one of my favorite teams in their last film, but I lost this crucial part of that team for a majority of the film. And his flashbacks were depressing as hell. Sad. If you're an animal lover, it's even harder to watch. But at the same time, I missed Rocket. This really, to me, this movie has less Rocket than the first two, and even the Avengers films, I feel like, had more Rocket. Because you're literally stuck. He's stuck in a coma, and you're getting flashbacks with him. But if this is the last movie, I want the whole team to be together so I get that chemistry, which makes these movies, to me, some of the most memorable of the MCU is because that team has so much great chemistry. I still enjoyed the movie, and I think there's some really cool set pieces. The soundtrack's awesome. But it's probably my least favorite of the three Guardian films. But that's not saying I didn't like the movie. I think the first two are amazing. I actually really love Guardians 2, and that's a movie that I think a lot of people weren't big fans of. Mm. I might like Guardians 2 more than Guardians 1, and I might be in the minority. Wow. Yeah, I might be in the minority there, but I love Guardians 2, and I really like Guardians 1. And this one I like, but not as much as those two.
The original Guardians of the Galaxy is in my top 5 favorite Marvel movies. It's a super obscure property, and it was done the right way. That was the first Marvel movie that really hit home with the humor. I think Guardians 2 went too hard with the humor. And so, like, my rankings of them are like Guardians 1, Guardians 3, and Guardians 2. Guardians 2 is by no means like a miss. I just think that they go for the humor a little too much. I think Ego is a weak villain for the Guardians to face off with.
How dare you talk about Captain Ron?
Okay, look, it's not saying it's not an awesome portrayal by oh my God, I'm forgetting his name, Kurt Russell. But it's just a weird villain. Like, they're fighting a planet. Like, at some points in time, they're like fighting tentacles with rocks. Like, the first Guardians is awesome because they get to kind of showcase like everybody's abilities. You have somebody like Drax the Destroyer, and Drax does nothing in Guardians 2. Nothing. He has like zero fight.
But he's maybe the funniest guy in the movie.
He is. And you've established like him as the funniest guy. So again, it's not like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 doesn't work for me. It does. Absolutely does. The scene with Yondu where he gets his hyphen on his head and he walks through the Ravager ships. That's one of the coolest sequences I've ever seen. I love that. Set to, you know, the great song. I absolutely
come like, a little bit closer.
So good. And like also, that
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Dude, Yondu's the best part of that movie, by far. Like he's my favorite. But Guardians 3 is a nice pin in the Guardians franchise to end certain people's stories in that movie. I don't think we're done seeing the Guardians, but I was okay actually learning a little bit more about Rocket. I had read that James Gunn's whole approach was to always tell the story from Rocket's perspective. And you're thinking it's Peter Quill because Chris Pratt's the top billed actor in the movie, but really this is Rocket's story. And it's fitting that at the end he becomes captain of the Guardians of the Galaxy and he starts his own team. That team looks super intriguing to me, the team at the end of the movie. But the way that everybody ends, I was very, very glad that nobody died. I thought for sure Rocket was dead in this movie, just from the previews alone. But it all hit home. When Rocket is finally reunited, everyone's reaction, like Karen Gillan, Chris Pratt, Groot, all of them, like their reaction to being reunited with Rocket just reaffirms that, like, this was a family, you know, as dysfunctional as it was. This was a family. I thought that they closed out Gamora really well because I was curious how Gamora was going to be, because realistically, the Gamora they know is dead. This is Gamora from years earlier when she was one of Thanos' henchmen. And I thought that they played her perfectly. I thought that they, at the end, Chris Pratt finally being able to move past her. I don't think we're ever going to see Drax or Nebula again, and it's fine. I can live without those characters. I'm good without Mantis. I thought that they finally gave Mantis something to do, you know, and I thought that she was kind of one of the standout in the movies, and it's fun to just kind of watch her through the movies. Like anytime she's into the movies, because what she does in the background is so funny. And in this one, like when they're going through space, she's just kind of toppling like head over heels with each other. I like the introduction a little more, like elaboration with Kraglin, with Cosmo the dog. So I liked a lot of it. And while the scenes with the animal torture and the animal experimentation are really hard to watch, it just makes you hate the villain that much more. So at the end, you want the High Evolutionary to be dead. Like you want that, like, ending to befit him, and that makes him a good villain. He's the strongest villain that the Guardians have had, really, like as far as character development. You had Ronan the Accuser. He was, again, he's just a bad guy with a lot of bad guys that follow him. Ego the Living Planet, yes, it hit home because it was Kurt Russell, but father. It was his father, but you know, they're fighting a planet. This one is a guy who, the guy owns companies, like, you know,
he's pretty one-dimensional. He's just a villain.
He's a bad dude, but they established that by the animal experimentation. And he's played brilliantly. And so you just want him to be dead. So I appreciate that, but I appreciate the ending and the send-off for the existing Guardians. I think we're still going to get Chris Pratt. He's on Earth. Don't think for a minute that Sam Wilson isn't going to scoop him up to be part of his Avengers team.
I think it said Star-Lord will return at the very end of the movie, so he's definitely come back.
Look, he can't just sit around and mow the lawn at his grandpa's house. Yeah. Like, don't think for a minute that when Cap starts to put together the Avengers that he's not paying Star-Lord a visit. So we will see Star-Lord again.
Did Adam Warlock work for you? Because I was a little disappointed with him, and because I feel like there was a lot of hype. They tease him at the end of Guardians 2, and I thought he was kind of, I don't know, didn't really work too much for me.
It did, because, look, Adam Warlock in the comics, it's a hard character to, like, put pen to paper. Adam Warlock is basically a god. And if you're introducing him this late, because he's the one that resolved the Infinity Wars in the comic books. If you're introducing him this late in the game, It's either got to be hit or miss because he's missed all the other action. So at this point in time, I actually like that he played just this like naive, like idiot. He's played perfectly. Like at the end when like they save everyone and they're all hugging, like he doesn't know what to do. So he just starts hugging them too. I like that. I like the naivety play like that was put into it. Like he was just kind of born yesterday. And he is still trying to figure things out. He has potential to be very, very powerful. I hope he's used again in the future. I hope it's not just a one and done. I actually hope that we get to see Rocket's team of Guardians down the line. I don't know if it's going to be in its own standalone, but maybe we see it in the Secret Wars or the Kang Dynasty. Like, I would like to see that team. I would like to see more of Adam Warlock. What we got from him was fine. I thought he was going to be the main villain of the movie, but really he's just kind of a nuisance. Like he pops up here and there. And obviously like he's the one who injures Rocket in the very beginning of the movie. So he's got enough to do. It's just a taste. Maybe he becomes more of this cosmic entity, but he's always been way too overpowered. And so I like that they grounded him a lot more in this movie. I don't need to see Adam Warlock, the savior of the galaxy. I just need to see Adam Warlock. For that, I thought they nailed it.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like the third one worked for you more than it did for me. It's, again, like I mentioned with Wakanda and some of these other movies, I need to go back and revisit it because I only saw it that one time in theaters. I have the 4K, so I'm going to pop it in soon. It's one of the ones I definitely wanted to revisit recently, especially before the end of the year, so I can kind of get my thoughts about it. But yeah, I remember leaving the theater after seeing Guardians 1 and 2 and just being on like a high. Like that was just such a great time. And I can't say I quite felt that way with Guardians 3, even though I think it's a good movie. I think it's definitely, it's nowhere near like the bottom tier. It's higher mid tier for me, but it's definitely not top tier.
Now, one thing that does need to be discussed with Phase 3 and Phase 4 is the amount of content that Marvel is putting out. It used to be that we would get 1 to 2 Marvel movies a year. And when that Marvel brand passed across the screen, it added this excitement to you. You couldn't wait because there was a continuation of a story. You needed to see what was going to happen next. The problem for me is with Phase 4 and Phase 5 and the streaming content as well, the shows that they've been putting out, there isn't a clear cut story. There was always a story in Phase 1, 2, and 3. You knew that it was all the Infinity War saga. You mentioned it earlier, like they'd give a flash of the Infinity Stone or there would be a reference to it or somehow it was connected and it moved forward. Even like a movie like Ant-Man teases the quantum realm, which is how, you know, they time traveled in Endgame, but also there's the Captain America Civil War tease at the end of it. This movie doesn't, or these movies don't seem to be going anywhere. There's no narrative. Yeah, I understand Kang is supposed to be the big baddie, but we've seen him in Loki. And then we saw him in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. There's no reference. There's no other post-credit scenes that lead to that. It just feels like they're spinning plates and they're just putting out more and more and more content. Because I mentioned it at the beginning, like, of this discussion. For me, like, they're just introducing people now. And for the sake of introducing people, and that's fine. I like She-Hulk. I like Kamala Khan. Like, I like the characters that they have been introducing. I like Kate Bishop. I like Sam Wilson as Captain America. So I like these characters that they are introducing. But there's no Avengers movie. That's tied them together. That's brought them all together to fight. The main villain that's supposed to be the big baddie at this point in time, we don't know his intentions except for ruling all of them. But then there's millions of them, and they all seem to be getting along because they're all cheering in a stadium at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. Yeah. So I don't really know what Marvel's endgame here. We know the schedule. We know what's upcoming. But I don't know what the hell to expect from Kang Dynasty.
Do you remember the after credit scene for Shang-Chi? It's with Mark Ruffalo and Wong. And they show like, oh, it looks like your rings are from like another galaxy. I thought that I was like, "Ooh, this is the beginning of something." That has not been referenced since. And yeah. I go back, every time I'm watching one of these new films, I'm like, Shang-Chi, like the rings, I keep waiting for his rings to play into some kind of role into something, because like I really felt like they were setting up at the end of that movie. And then the end and the after credit scene for Doctor Strange, Charlize Theron shows up, like, "You need to come with me." That hasn't played out before. It really felt like those after credit or mid credits were building to the next movie or something that would come to some fruition. And it feels like lately it hasn't been the case.
The other problem too is there's so many characters now. It's like, how do you even introduce, like, who's going to be in next? And then you have a new character that, like, we both are like, "Dude, Shang-Chi rocks. Where the hell is he?" Like, yeah. They used to show up in each other's movies. And so you get this continuation of a little bit of their story too. It feels all over the place. And I said it in the first segment, like, Feige is just too much.
Yeah.
Scale back.
If just going by year and my opinions as we're going through this movies, there's ups and downs for both of us. We didn't agree on all the movies. We agreed on some. It's just been kind of a mixed bag, and it's been, you know, kind of hills and valleys. So Phase 5 is off to not the worst start. I mean, we're going to get into the Marvels next, but, like, I didn't hate Ant-Man. I liked Guardians, but it's just not home run after home run after home run like it used to be back in the day.
I will say this. I do think that there is hope on the horizon. Like I said, I will talk about this more in the next segment with Paige Fabretti, but I very much enjoyed the Marvels. I very much enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. Like, they're still capable of putting out good movies. So don't give up on Marvel, folks. But Marvel really does need to pump the brakes and put out less content. I'm very encouraged because I very much enjoyed Loki. And I thought that the way that they handled Loki at the end was just incredible. And then I go and I see the Marvels and I love it. So I'm curious where they're going to go. I think, like, they've teased incursions with Doctor Strange. I don't know if Kang will continue to be the bad guy. If you know the whole incursion story, Doctor Doom is kind of right at the center of all of that. And with the writer strikes being over, like, a lot of projects have been pushed because of those for Marvel. So we're not going to get Doctor Doom anytime soon. In fact, I think the only Marvel movie we're getting next year is going to be Deadpool 3. And honestly, I'm okay with that. I'm excited for that movie. I like Sean Levy. I like that teaming of him and Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. So I think that will be a fun movie. And I think that's really all. We might get one other series maybe next year. And I think that's all Marvel needs to put out. At this juncture, we've got so many movies. We've got so many shows. There's so many characters. Take your time. It's like a fine wine. It needs time to age. And just like that, we're aging you guys with our thoughts on this. But we are going to take a break. And up next is our third segment, which is our review of Nia DaCosta's The Marvels. And we're joined by the boss and badass herself, Paige Fabretti. Stay tuned.
Own the video that's perfect for Halloween and anytime you watch it.
Fantastic!
It's an instant classic for both kids and grown-ups.
Eureka!
Siskel and Ebert give it two thumbs up. Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, on sale now at a special low price.
In a distant corner of our galaxy, an invincible alliance has been formed.
Engage! Let's go!
Jack in the Box and the new Paramount Motion Picture, Star Trek Generations, team up to give you a free Star Trek Generations Movie Collector's Cup when you galaxy-size any Supreme Value combo. For just 39 cents more, beam up to bigger fries, a larger drink. Collect all four limited edition cups. It's a stellar deal for just 39 cents more, only at Jack in the Box.
Welcome back, folks. We really, really do. I say this every week, but we have the greatest sponsors in the biz, and our man in charge himself, JTE, just finds these amazing sponsors. I know I've said this probably five or six times, still waiting for Jameson and Guinness to become a sponsor, but they're missing out. It's their it's their miss by not sponsoring the Extra Movie Butter podcast. But folks, we have a fun one now for our third segment. We're joined by the one and only, the Boston badass herself, Paige Fabretti. We're going to be talking the Marvels, the most recent release by the MCU. I've lost count on where this falls in the MCU in terms of like theatrical releases, but this newest release directed by Nia DaCosta, coming out to not great reviews from critics and not a huge box office return for a $200 million budget. Sadly, because I had a ton of fun with this movie, but we'll go into that. But first, we want to welcome Paige. How you doing?
You know what? It's so nice to be here. And I'm happy that I get to be the woman on the show today to talk about this show, this episode of The Marvels, because female empowerment, man. So I'm happy to be here.
That's right. Glad to hear it. Also glad to hear you. Haven't seen you in a while, Paige. Hope you're doing good.
It's been a while. Thank God no one can like see me in this podcast, because like I was telling JTE, I look like the woman from Home Alone 2. So
the pigeon lady. Yes. Love it. Okay. Well, hopefully you don't have a bag of seeds under that hoodie. But let's talk Marvels. And we'll do non-spoilers. So for those of you who have not seen the Marvels, this is your time to tune in to get our general reactions. But spoilers, we will go into spoiler alert soon. So, Paige, you're our guest. Tell us, what did you think of Nia DaCosta's The Marvels?
Yeah, honestly, like, I don't get what is going on right now in the internet. Like, why is this movie breaking the internet? Because I had a lot of fun with this film. Is it the best, like, Marvel film? No. But is it the worst Marvel film? No. It's very middle of the road, and there are some issues here and there, but, like, I gotta say, like, it has a lot of like great like comedic beats and a lot of great action sequences. And I mean, the chemistry between our three leads is like spectacular that like you can't go wrong. I really don't know what everyone is like complaining about online and attacking people for liking this movie, because it's not bad. I walked out of it very like joyful. I had a fun time with it.
JTE. What do you think? Initial thoughts. You saw it today, right?
Yes, I did. I saw it this morning. So went to early Dolby Cinema screening. And I will say this. I rewatched the first Captain Marvel about two nights ago, just because every time there's a new movie coming out, especially in the MCU or DC, I like to just go back and watch the film that came before. I don't always do like every Captain America movie before the next Captain America, but I at least like to do the last film. And this is the second Captain Marvel that we're getting in the MCU. And I got to say, rewatching the first film, I didn't love it when I first saw it. I think one of the biggest issues is Brie Larson felt like she didn't have a lot of character. She was kind of a blank slate, I felt like, a lot of the time. And that movie has Jude Law, Annette Bening, Ben Mendelsohn. Like, the cast of that movie is stacked. And yet, even though they have all those great actors and ingredients, it never really took off for me, pun intended. And yes, I gotta, you know, go back to Paige here. I had pretty damn low expectations walking in this theater, because people, friends of mine, hated this movie. But then the movie came, I feel like a lot of the critics who saw this, like when they saw the critic reviews, that's when most of the hate, or like, again, I don't want to say hate, but people were just not happy with the movie or how it turned out. And then this weekend, I started seeing a couple people that I know on social media saying, I had a lot of fun. This is actually a really good time. So in my head, I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't a total, you know, trash dumpster fire. Maybe this could be a fun movie. Well, I'm here to say I saw the movie and I had a pretty damn good time. I thought it was a pretty good time. I'm shocked. All three of us sounds like we had a good time with this movie. And I don't know if that's because we just had super low expectations, but I don't think that's the fact. I actually enjoyed this one more than the first film. I think they actually do a better job of giving Brie Larson some actual... She's like, she's actually having fun in this movie. And it's hard not to have fun when you have these three actresses who are all bringing something a little different and they have really good chemistry together. There's a couple scenes that I want to get to in spoilers. I think people have kind of pointed out as like, that's where the, you know, they nuked the fridge or they jumped the shark. But I didn't have any issues with those scenes because I thought they were just these little side fun kind of scenarios that we had. again, I think it comes down to the chemistry. I think the action scenes were pretty fun. I think the movie overall is just here to have a good time. It is not the Winter Soldier. It is not trying to be anything super serious. I think the villain is kind of weak, but at the same time, that's nothing new in the MCU. Most of the villains are weak. For me, it was more about these three women and how they came together and became this team of the Marvels. And if that is what is successful in this movie, then I think everything else, whether successful or not, is kind of, you know, hearsay. To me, the core of the movie is those three, and that worked for me. And again, Ms. Marvel was a show that I really enjoyed. It's probably one of the, I think, one of the better MCU shows. And I think, you know, I don't want to pronounce your name wrong.
Iman Vellani.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. I think she's great. She's a star. I loved her in the show, and I loved her in this movie. And she is a standout for me. I think when I look back, she is a standout because her energy is infectious. It's just like, my God, you can tell she's just having an absolute ball throughout this whole film. So, again, is there problems? Absolutely. Is it, you know, bottom of the barrel MCU? No, it's like, I think it's in that mid area, which going into this movie, that is not where I thought this movie was going to land. I thought I had really low expectations, but yeah, had a good time, man. I don't know what else to say. I can't wait to, I think I'll get into a little bit more in spoilers about some of the weaknesses of the film, but had a good time.
I freaking loved this movie.
Wow.
I had we a have a blast. This was, if you remember, my like most anticipated left on the year. This was my number one.
Really? Oh, wow.
And I mean, I'm actually, you know what? I'm sorry. This was my number two. Taika Waititi's next release, The Next Goal Wins. That's the one I'm looking forward to the most. But I had a blast with this. And JT, you touched on it. I'm gonna hammer that nail home. Ms. Marvel was my favorite of the Marvel series, although the newest Loki series was pretty freaking epic. But
yeah,
I loved Ms. Marvel. I think Iman Vellani, is her energy is just infectious. Like, I love seeing her on screen as Kamala Khan, this character. And as somebody who still like buys comic books every Wednesday, like, I love the character of Kamala Khan. So I love that she's finally getting into the like MCU movies and mixing it up with other superheroes. And so the three of them are outstanding together. And yeah, again, the criticism of the villain, fine. I understood her motivations. I don't get the internet's toxic fandom. The movie not doing well this weekend reminds me of the all-female Ghostbusters movie. Yep. That movie was dead on arrival because misogynistic assholes went online and protested that this is not my Ghostbusters. And it's tragic because, you know what? I like that Ghostbusters movie. It has its moments. It's fun. My biggest criticism of that movie is they filmed it in Boston and pretended it was New York. Just let it be Boston.
It would have been nice if they did that.
That's right.
And I think that's the weirdest thing, like coming in, like going into this movie, is like, are people just like not excited because it's three women? Like, I just don't get it, because honestly, this movie reminded me a lot of like the Guardians of the Galaxy, like trilogy. It had a lot of, it's a team of misfits, like getting together, trying to like find their balance within each other. But it's also like it is like them conjoining their powers together, but it's more about like them kind of finding like their identity as a team and like individually. And like, kind of like you guys said, like Brie Larson like gets to be more humanized in this like outing. And I don't know. I honestly think I liked Captain Marvel when it came out, but I kind of think I like this one more just because it is really joyful and it's like vibrant and it's fun. And a lot, like I said, Guardians of the Galaxy is one of my favorite MCU movies. And to me, this is very similar, like has a very similar take as those movies do. So I don't get why, and no one's like giving it a chance. I think they're just like going in because Marvel has been in such like shambles right now that people just don't want to have a good time. They want to go in there expecting like it to be the best thing ever so that they can get back on track. But you got to think, we're in these like weird phases right now that we're still building. And I thought what we got with this was great. And like the way it ended, it like leaves us like with more. And I'm looking forward to that. And we even get like a mid-credit scene that leads to more as well. So I don't know. I think people need to give this like film a chance because it's worth the while.
I'll say this. Go ahead. Okay. I think, you know, anyone who really loves movies never walks into a theater wanting to hate a film. I think you always walk into that theater wanting to have a good time. I mean, if you love cinema, you live for walking to that theater. The lights dim, you see the trailers, and you cannot wait to actually experience a good movie. I will say this, Moose. I was really looking forward to that female Ghostbusters movie because I love Paul Feig and I love the cast. The movie did not work for me at all. Kind of hated it. But this is, you know, I don't bring any prejudice when I walk into a movie. I just want to see a good movie. And I had a really good time with this. I will say this for people wondering, do I need to go back and watch WandaVision or Ms. Marvel? I don't think you have to, but I think it greatly enhances this movie. Because with Khan's family also being a large role in this film, having that time with them and seeing her story, especially with how she gets the bracelet and everything, a lot of that did feel kind of crucial to me. And I wonder if you didn't watch those shows and you went and watched this, will you still have a good time? Of course. Will it be as fulfilling if you saw those shows? I don't think so. So if you are going to see this and you haven't seen those shows, I would say watch those before.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen WandaVision, but I've seen Ms. Marvel. And I actually really enjoyed Ms. Marvel because it's a nice, like, coming of age, like, show. But we get to know that character more. And like you said, her family is such a big part of, like, this entry. So that I feel like it's definitely, I think, worth it. It will boost your experience. I don't think it will hurt it, but I think it will definitely boost it.
I will say, like, I am experiencing superhero fatigue. And as I'm hosting this podcast right now, I'm wearing a Captain America shirt, right? But I am experiencing a little bit of superhero fatigue, and that mostly is because there's so much out there. But I will say, like, seeing a movie like this harkened me back to, like, the good days of Marvel. This felt like an Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, it's a fun movie. It's not the worst Marvel movie. Like, this just proves that Marvel hasn't left it, like, lost its step. It may be still trying to find its way post-Endgame, but it still can put out good content. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 was a great movie. This was a really fun, great movie. So I think Marvel's actually starting to get back on the right track. The Loki series was incredible. Secret Invasion, the less we talk about Secret Invasion, the better. I like Nick Fury in this movie far better than anything that I've seen from Secret Invasion. And we might as well, let's go into spoilers. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Because I actually thought, like, I was like, are we playing too much on Nick Fury? Like, I was a little turned off after the Secret Invasion, but dude, they brought Nick Fury, like, prime Nick Fury into this. And it works because the one thing that really did work for me in the original Captain Marvel movie was the relationship between Brie Larson and Sam Jackson. I loved that. And I love that they're, like, still in each other's lives. Like, she's off on another part of the universe, but, like, she still communicates with Fury. They're still working together. It worked really well for me. It was fun to see him back. And his interactions with Kamala Khan's family were one of, like, some of the funniest moments on screen when he's first taking them up to the space station and he's like, your dad's not doing well. The dad's just, like, freaking out. The brother's, like, FaceTiming his wife. He's like, and there's no recording. So, yeah, I don't know. That relationship worked. The relationship between Tiana Paris, Iman Vellani, and Brie Larson, Carol Danvers, Monica Rambeau, and Kamala Khan was outstanding. Seeing them together was so much fun. The singing planet was a blast. I had so much fun with that. I don't care what the internet says. I thought that was so freaking funny.
I don't get why people are hating on that scene, because that is a scene, like, straight out of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, they would go to a random weird-ass planet. I'm sorry, I hope I can swear.
Yeah,
and they would go to a random, like, planet, and these would be, like, the species there. Like, this is what they do. Like, I don't know. It didn't take me out of the movie. I feel like I saw a lot of people saying, like, I was watching it and, like, what was going on? I was like, no, this is, like, actually quite hilarious. And the singing could have gotten annoying, but it didn't, though.
Yeah, they stopped it before it went long enough to get annoying. That was what I was like, oh, that's smart. Like,
Monica's reactions and Kamala Khan, like Kamala instantly is into it and she's dancing. And then like it takes a little bit, but then Monica's like dancing with her. Like, I don't know, it works so freaking great for me.
Yeah, it seemed like from what I could tell from social media, like that was the scene. That seems to be one of the scenes where people are like, I'm done with this movie. Like, I'm jumping off the ship. Mm-hmm. I can't really handle it. So maybe in my head it was going to be a lot longer and a lot worse. But I didn't think it was bad at all. I thought it was very, you know, funny. You go to these different planets. There's interesting things that happen. There's interesting, you know, characters that we meet along the way. I like the whole idea of, like, she had to marry this guy. It was diplomatic. And the girls are kind of giving her a hard time. And I think the other scene, again, I heard, like, a lot of people were saying there's two scenes where you're going to be like, I'm done with this movie. It's a gimmick. I think the other scene is the goose laying all the eggs and then all the cats coming out. And I was like, okay, I mean, that doesn't really bother me. But I actually thought it was really funny and clever that they had to start eating all the people on the ship. Yeah. And I thought that was like one of the funniest sequences of the movie. Like, it was like a horror movie with this music playing. And I'm like, oh, this is really funny. And it, again, like Paige said, it felt like something I would see in a Guardians of the Galaxy or something along those lines, or Thor Ragnarok. It felt like it had that kind of humor. And I just don't understand why people are harping on these two like scenes so much and how that could ruin the movie for you. There's so much more to this movie than just those two scenes, and I don't think either of them overstay their welcome.
Yep. I will say, like, my two favorite scenes of this is the training sequence with them learning how to, like, switch with their powers.
Yes!
I thought that was so fun and so clever because that's real. Those are, like, team exercises that you would do with, like, a team to, like...
Scotch.
Exactly. Yeah. I could definitely not do that. But, like, it was very clever for them to show like them doing these different like training montages for them to like become like sync in a sense. And yeah, the Flurkin, that's what they're called, right? Flurkin. Yeah.
Yep.
I thought that was hysterical. I am not a cat person. And I was like, damn, I really want to go get a kitten right now. After, like, that
movie, like- to me, and Paige, you correct me because I'm not that I've been to any, but like a couple girls get together. Oh my Lord, a Flurkin just... attacked Paige. The scene where they're doing the hopscotch and they're kind of training, it almost felt like they're having like a girls' night sleepover or something. And they're all just kind of getting to know each other and practicing. Got Sabotage playing in the background.
Right.
I thought that was one of the scenes that was just really endearing to me. And I think that's another scene I seen people online say that like they complained about it. And I was like, I just don't. These people just went in wanting to hate this movie.
Yeah,
just didn't want to have fun. That's what it feels like to me.
Exactly. And that's like the biggest pain in the butt because I don't like you said earlier, like you shouldn't, if you love film, you should never be rooting for a movie to do poorly. You should like want films to succeed. Like, so you should go into it just like hoping for the best, like hoping for the best in a sense. And I feel like a lot of people are just like taking that away from this movie because it is a great time. And like you said, like, especially like with that like training montage, like, we're getting to know these characters and they're while they're opening up with each other, like we're opening up to the film, like, all right, this is what we're getting into in a sense. And I really enjoyed that. I mean, this movie's full of energy. So like, I don't get how you could walk out of this film having a bad time. No. Yeah, like you said, like the villain is underdeveloped. She is weak, but that's nothing new from the MCU. But we understood what she was like trying to succeed in a sense. Like she's trying to save her planet. So in her eyes, she isn't doing anything bad. I wish we spent more time with her. But other than that, I mean, the script was a little subpar here and there because I did feel like there were scenes missing out of the film. Like, I feel like they, like, the pacing is, like, really well done. It, like, flies through that hour and 45 minutes. But I felt like we were missing scenes. Like, things would just, like, jump and appear. And I'd be like, wait, I needed more explanation on that. Or why did that happen? And we didn't get that. And I felt like they wanted to cut this film back.
Yeah, I thought the villain's plan, even though she was underdeveloped, it was kind of a cool idea. Yeah. The fact that she's stealing the sun, water from a planet of water. She's stealing resources to regain her planet's life. I actually wish this movie kind of had like a Batman v Superman opening. Remember the opening of that film is Ben Affleck and his whole Gotham's being destroyed? Imagine if you had the villain's point of view and all she saw was her planet being destroyed and all you see is Captain Marvel. You know, like you do get that one scene where she like hits her with the rubble and she's like in the place. I think they could have done a better job of establishing the villain's, you know, hatred for her from the get-go. And she sees Captain Marvel as like this awful human being who destroyed her planet. And I think they also could have done a better job of showing Brie Larson dealing with that. Yeah. It does get some lip service, but it never feels like they really dive into it.
Well, the scene that you're talking about, like, should have been at the beginning of the movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The scene where it does actually show it from Darben's like perspective, they should have elongated that scene, and that should have been at the beginning of the movie, so that you see that, you know, as heroic and like altruistic as Captain Marvel is, like, hey, maybe going there had a lot of repercussions on people that she didn't consider at the time. That's obviously kind of the theme of the movie. So I like the character development, like with Captain Marvel and learning, like, yeah, at the end of Captain Marvel, you're like, yeah, go fucking stick it to the Kree. But then you don't really like think like, if you kill this, like the planet basically goes to waste. And that's the repercussions of it. So if they would have taken out the stupid scene where she finds the bangle and replaced it with that scene.
Yes.
Then I really think you would have been like, okay, I got a different perspective from this villain, you know, maybe a little more like empathetic perspective towards Darben, rather than, okay, she's, you know, a badass chick with a hammer who wants to steal the ozone, the sun, and some water.
Because she did remind me a lot of Killmonger. Is that his name from Black Panther? Like, they have similar motives in a sense that they want to save and preserve their home. And I just like wish they just, like you said, I wish they just like kind of dove into that more. And maybe that could have been like the opening sequence with meeting her to understand what were they calling Captain Marvel? The Destroyer, the
Annihilator.
Annihilator. Like, I wanted to know like more about that before like this like happens, kind of, in a sense.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say the relationship between her and Monica Rambeau and how they're kind of, you know, there's a little bit of friction there.
Yeah.
The movie's pacing is so fast and it's trying to have so much fun. Like, it feels like a side note almost. Like, I didn't even realize when we started, like, oh, there's some, you know, friction here. And then you kind of understand it with the whole time they're going through the mind. They're using the Kree technology. Mm. But this movie, I think, you know, the pacing, while it keeps it really fun and going, it does feel like they kind of just speed over some of the character development and the relationships that are happening. And I think, you know, maybe this movie, it's 1 hour 45. Even if it was just 15 minutes longer, maybe 2 hours straight. I mean, the first Captain Marvel is like 2:15, and it's rare for a sequel to be less than the original. So I wonder if Paige is right. Like, I feel like something might have been on the cutting room floor because Marvel was like, we need to get this thing under a certain amount of time. We need more the theater showings. We need to make more money. And they're just maybe feeling the pressure of like the last few films not doing great. I mean, Guardians did amazing. I made like $800+ million. Mm-hmm. But you could tell Marvel is kind of feeling the coals to their feet a little bit.
Yeah, they're definitely in shambles. But like, I don't know. Like, the thing is, Marvel can feel so convoluted at times, but I kind of liked that this film was like, in a sense, kind of like a standalone. At the end, it kind of ties like, oh, okay, this is why this story happened, because we get the end scene, which, can we talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, we're in spoiler territory, folks. So if you haven't seen it, come back and listen to the rest of this.
We're already been in spoilers. Are you talking about the last scene or the mid-credit scene?
Well, the last scene, and then we'll go into the mid-credit scene.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I have some thoughts on both. Go ahead.
I'm like, I have some thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually kind of excited. Like, now what's to look forward to is we're getting a Young Avengers movie.
Yeah.
I'm hoping in phase 6, but I mean, who knows at this point. But it's also exciting to see that our Young Avengers, so far we have an established team of, I believe it's what, 3 like strong women, young women too, which I think is pretty, well, obviously they have to be young, but 3 women to be in it, which is awesome. So we have a hot girl. Is it Hot Girl? Is that her name now?
It's just Hawkeye.
Okay, so she's this Hawkeye now?
She's the new Hawkeye.
Is she Kate Bishop or is she going by Hawkeye?
Well, she goes by Kate Bishop, but then she also goes by Hawkeye. Like, he bequeathed that title to her at the end of the series. Okay, also, a great Christmas series, Hawkeye.
Love
Hawkeye. That out for next month.
I agree. But yeah, we have her. We have Miss Marvel and... We have
Ant-Man's daughter.
Ant-Man's daughter.
That's what she says. She goes, Ant-Man has a daughter.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious. But like, yeah, so I'm curious to see if maybe I'm blanking on Florence Pugh's character's name.
Yelena Belova.
Yeah, if she'll be in it, because I know she's going to be in Thunderbolts. Maybe T'Challa's son will grow up and he can be in it, but then he'd probably only be like 12 years old, so who knows? But
there's also, so they didn't really expand his character a lot, but in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Isaiah Bradley, which was the second person to take the superhero serum or the super soldier serum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His grandson is Eli Bradley, and he is the leader of the Young Avengers. He goes by the Patriot. He carries a Captain America style shield, and because his grandfather had the super soldier serum, he has abilities himself. So you could also wrangle him in with this Young Avengers group. I don't know if they will, because they really didn't expand too much with that kid. But I'm so excited, like. That when I saw Kate Bishop like hanging up her bow, or first I saw Pizza Dog, I was like,
yeah,
yeah, let's go, baby. And then when she hangs up the bow, I was like, okay, finally,
yeah,
like you've been teasing this for years now, Marvel. Mm-hmm. Like, thank you for finally getting. And this is what makes me think like maybe Marvel's getting back on the right track. They tried the multiverse stuff and. Frankly, it didn't work as well as I thought they thought it was going to. There are standout movies from that section, but like I think Marvel's starting to write the course. I think there's a train. Paige is in Boston, folks. Remember. The trains are a big part of transportation.
I'm muted. I'm sorry, guys. I was like, oh no, it's coming. Where's the mute button?
I like that we're finally getting this. Like, it made me excited. Mm-hmm. I love Hailee Steinfeld. I want to see more of that character because I thought she was also a standout in the Hawkeye series.
Yeah.
I thought she was great in that series. I think Hailee Steinfeld's just a great actress altogether. I've been a huge fan of hers ever since True Grit. And I thought she was also great in Edge of 17. So when she got cast as Kate Bishop, I was like, perfect. I love the scene because it is a playoff of the Samuel Jackson scene
from
the original Avengers movie. And to have them set it up like that and have her sitting in the shadows and basically doing line for line, I was just loving every second of it. I'm so happy to see that they're going to team up. And I am curious to see who else is going to make up the team. And I also, because it seems like Marvel has pushed almost all their movies to 2025. Mm-hmm. I think as of right now, the only Marvel film coming out next year is the Deadpool Wolverine film.
Yeah.
It feels like they're just taking a year to like relax, reshuffle, get our bearings. So I do feel like even though we're getting this introduction and we'll get to the mid-credit in a second, it does feel like everything's kind of getting pushed back the year or two down the road. So while I am excited like that these things are being introduced, I also know it's going to be a while before we see any of this probably come to fruition.
I mean, hey, who knows? Maybe we can get a secret release like in December. I mean, I don't know how they would make that happen, but if they did, it'd be awesome. Because if you guys think about it, Phase 4 and 5, we haven't gotten an Avengers film. And in every phase, we had at least an Avengers film. So we haven't gotten one thus far. And we don't even know who the Avengers are. So now at least we know we're starting to know who the Young Avengers are. So I have high hopes.
I actually think that hurts Marvel not having an Avengers film. Like this many films into it for sure. And you've introduced so many characters since Endgame. So that's a big question mark. Like, okay, you've introduced at this point in time, probably 20 additional characters. Who is an Avenger now? Like before you knew who it was, like Nick Fury was putting them together. Where the hell is Sam Wilson in any of these movies? Like the new Cap, you think he would be putting the team together? We haven't seen him in anything.
What happened to him? What happened to the Internals? Like you introduced like 10 characters in that movie and we don't see or hear from them ever again. Like it's
I'm okay with that. Well, let's talk post-credit scene. So have seen this, we get not only Maria Rambeau showing up again, but she's showing up as the character Binary, which is like a Captain Marvel type character. And then you hear Kelsey Grammer's voice.
Yes.
And who walks in but the Beast himself, Hank McCoy, baby.
I was losing my mind in the theater. I was losing my mind.
I had a really tame theater, and I think I was the only one, like, there would be certain sequences that I would be like, yes, and nobody would say anything. And then when Beast walked in, I was like, no shit. Like, I think that's, I said that out loud.
I literally looked, I actually saw the movie with Andre and Andres and Jen Kemp. And I literally looked at Jen and I was like, it's Frasier. Like,
oh man,
I know that voice.
He was completely CGI too. That was not Kelsey in a suit like X3. This was CGI.
As awesome as it was to see him, I also think it's very ominous because I think they're pivoting, and this is just my thought, but I think they're pivoting away from Kang. Because obviously the Jonathan Majors is, you know, is he a domestic abuser? Is he not? Like, there's still a lot surrounding him on a personal level. So I think Marvel's trying to steer the focus away from him. And I think they're going to be moving into incursions as being a big part of the next MCU. And if you remember in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, an incursion is where one universe collides with the other and both die. And they teased it. An incursion was happening. The other universe was bleeding into Earth 616 universe right there, and she went on the other side. What's ominous for me is we now have the X-Men universe now, right?
That's the X-Men universe now. That's why I'm like pumped for it.
I'm pumped for that. And I would be totally fine if they did a whole nother universe, but I also worry that the Secret Wars is based on there only being a couple of multiverses left fighting to survive. And eventually they all die. And so I'm hoping that it's not an ominous, like, oh shit, we finally got Beast. Oh shit, they all have to fight Beast. Like, I would hate that. I would love for there to be an alternate universe MCU where we get the X-Men universe and you don't have to tie it to 616.
Well, I feel like Deadpool Wolverine is going to have to touch on this a little bit.
Oh, Deadpool Wolverine is bouncing every universe. I can't wait for that.
That's
why Elektra coming back in Deadpool.
I'm so curious to see what that movie is going to do because I really feel like it's going to kind of set the table for where the MCU is going to go forward. I think that is really going to be the we all thought it was going to be Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. No, I think it's going to be Deadpool Wolverine that's really going to set the table. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun with all the characters that are going to pop up throughout that movie. But yeah, for her to be in another multiverse, you know, when I first saw Monica Rambeau's mother, I was like, oh, wait, are we like, I started thinking back to Doctor Strange's multiverse. I'm like, oh, she's kind of the Captain Marvel type character in here. But when Beast walked in that room and I heard Kelsey Grammer, I just could not believe that they actually went this far. It's kind of like when, WandaVision? We got Quicksilver, Evan Peters in his Quicksilver uniform, but it turned out to just be like a nod, not an actual crossover. Mm-hmm. This is an actual crossover to the X-Men universe. And when he said Charles, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was a cool nod.
Where's Patrick Stewart?
Yeah, it begs the question. Patrick Stewart's already been in the MCU as McAvoy. Charles Xavier. Do we get McAvoy? Do we get Patrick Stewart again as Professor X?
It is curious with that too, because you think like, hey, let's start fresh, let's recast everyone, but then you bring in Kelsey Grammer, so it's like, how are you guys going about doing this? But also too, with Deadpool and Wolverine, I think that's what they're going to do, is they're going to take, I think I've like saw that they're going to take like all the Supreme like pretty much individuals from like the Supreme character from like, so like out of the Spider-Man, still pick maybe probably Tom Holland, like things like that. So they're probably like, so Nicholas Holt, but they're probably like, fuck you. Like, yeah. The camera is our Beast. Like,
they're going to cherry pick who they want. I feel like,
yeah. And no, and definitely.
They could get.
I do think as we go into, cause I know we're going to lose Paige here in a few minutes, but before we do, I do want to go into final thoughts about this movie. I think all three of us can agree this movie is a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, go see this movie, folks. If you have it, go see it. If you have seen it, go see it again. This movie was so much fun, but I do want to get everybody's final thoughts. Paige, you're our guest. We love that you're here with us. Lay it on us.
I get to take it away. Lucky me. But yeah, no, I will say like, And it's like, this word can be thrown around like so all over the place, but this movie is genuinely fun. Like, it's a good time. I've said it so many times already on here, but it reminded me of Guardians of the Galaxy. It has that team dynamic of learning how to become a unit with each other. And to me, it's not even like this movie, it's them learning how to like sync their powers, but it's more about them like becoming individuals and like humanizing them in a sense. And I really like, at its core, that's what this film is. And I think people really need to give it more of a chance and go into it open-minded and just like looking for like a fun time, because that's what you'll walk away with. It's not the greatest MCU film. It's not, and it's certainly not the worst. So if you go into it with expectations of, hey, I want to have a good time, like, you're going to be laughing your ass off throughout this film. And if you like kittens, then you will have a grand old time. So
I will say, okay, so there's the scene when like all the little flurkins are running around and eating everyone. And there's like the one space station woman. It's like straight out of a horror scene, and she's hiding from them.
Yeah.
And she like looks to her right, and there's Goose with a kitten, and they're just like, meow. And then it eats it. Oh my God, it's so great.
And now we know Goose is a girl, I guess.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I love how the PA is like, do not run. Please let them eat you.
Yeah.
That was
great.
Well, JT, your final thoughts on the Marvels?
Yeah, you know, I think comedy is subjective, of course. Mm-hmm. Whether the comedy works for you, that's up to you. But I think, you know, the doom and gloom that going into this film on the social media and through some of the critics I saw had my expectations low. But honestly, if I feel like even if I didn't go in with those low expectations, I still had a really good time with the movie. For people who say this is lower tier or like bottom of the basement Marvel, I just can't understand that. I think, you know, I really did not like Thor Love and Thunder, and I liked it even less on rewatches. But maybe there's some people out there who like that movie. I haven't met any of them, but I'm sure they're out there. I think this movie, while again is not top tier Marvel, it's definitely not bottom tier. It's right in that middle tier. And you know what? I'll take a middle tier Marvel movie over a bottom tier. I had a good time. I think the cast is having a good time with the film. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, once again, you know, Ms. Marvel is kind of the highlight for me. But also, I think Brie Larson brings much more personality into the role. It looks like she really kind of fits into the character much more than the first film. Yeah, Nick Fury is a lot of fun. I think the cast overall, the family in there, brings a lot of fun to the film also. I mean, if you go back and count the amount of times we said fun in this review, you kind of will understand where we're coming from. It's just a fun movie. And if you didn't like it, that's you know, totally cool. You don't like it, but I just don't think this movie is getting way too much hate. And I just think that it's a shame. People are prejudging before they even watch it. I'll watch this way more than I watched the first Captain Marvel movie. Like, this is something I'll actually go back and rewatch a little bit more because of the fun I'm having with it. So
that is one thing I'll say with it too. I feel like this movie is very rewatchable.
Yeah. I hope it's going to gain the audience on rewatches. I hope it's going to gain the audience because, you know, look, sadly, toxic fandom is a thing. And sadly, you know, there are people who are going to bash this movie simply because, I mean, if you remember, Captain Marvel and Shazam came out the same year. And there were those douchebags that were like, Captain Marvel is actually Shazam, so I'm going to boycott that one. I'm not going to go watch Captain Marvel because that's not the real Cap. It's like, God, go suck a lemon. Like, seriously, like, this movie is a ton of fun. There is character-like development in this one. There's a family dynamic, like, invested in this one. Like, how great was it when she walked out? Like, it was a seriously emotional scene when she walks out and her parents are like, oh my God, you saved the world. But she's sad and she has to deliver the news to Nick Fury that Monica Rambeau is gone. Like, there's heartfelt moments in this movie. There's so much chemistry. Like, this movie oozes chemistry. It's so much fun. And I'm with you guys. I'm baffled at people going online and just trashing this movie. Like, I have to believe that there's like a huge tint of misogynistic like views that go into like the bashing of this movie. Is it the greatest Marvel movie? No. Will it fall into the same category as like an Ant-Man or a Guardians of the Galaxy where they're just fun movies to watch? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Marvel needs that. Not everything needs to be the end of the world. It's just great to see these three women team up together, make that chemistry and go save the world. Like, oh my God, it's so much fun. And yes, the hints to the Young Avengers, the hints to an X-Men universe. What are we missing here? These are all the key ingredients to an amazing superhero movie. So what are we missing, people? Why aren't you going out and spending the money in theaters?
I'll say this. We did. Unfortunately, Benny wasn't able to make it to the episode this week. I would love to hear what Benny would have thought of this, because he's it's hard to pin down what he's going to like and not like.
Yeah.
Benny might have been one of the people who said this was an awful, awful movie. So maybe we'll get an update from him next week if he gets a chance to watch it.
The guy is an enigma wrapped in a riddle. I agree. Well, we are going to wrap up, but before we do, we want to thank the always amazing Boston Badass Paige herself. Paige, where can people find you? What you working on? You guys in the Bite Size Breakdown are killing it right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, no, first and foremost, thank you guys for having me on. I'm sorry I couldn't stay later, but I would love to come back anytime, because this was like awesome to like hang out with you guys. I felt like we were our own team of the Marvels. There's three of us right here. We got the strong nice. Chemistry going, you know? But yeah, no, thank you guys. And yeah, you guys can check me out on Instagram and Twitter at FrontPageNews9. And make sure to go follow and check out everything we're doing over at BiteSizeBreakdown.com. You can follow us on social media, BiteSizeBreakdown, for all your fun little reviews of TV, film, top five list, articles, whatever you guys want, we got. So thank you guys again. And Phil, and make sure you go check out my review for the Marvels, because as you can tell, I really enjoyed it. So
awesome. Well, Paige, you're the best. Thank you so much for being on. And folks, thank you for tuning in. We had a lot of fun with this movie, and I've said it probably three times, and I'm going to say it again. Go see this movie in theaters. It deserves all the money. It should make its budget back times two. Like, this movie is great. Don't sit on your ass and think differently. Go make an opinion for yourself. Don't let somebody else form that opinion. Go see the movie. You're going to have fun. I promise it. If I'm wrong and you don't have fun, JT will refund you your money.
Happy that.
Good night, everybody. See you next episode.
I'm leaving the country.